For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. The US has announced a cabin baggage ban on large electronic devices on some flights from a series of Muslim-majority countries. The Department of Homeland Security says bombs could be concealed in devices like laptops, tablets and DVD players. Kevin McAleese reports from Washington.
If an electronic device is larger than a cell phone or smartphone, it won't be allowed through as carry-on luggage. The guidance from the Department of Homeland Security on Tuesday, as it outlined sweeping security measures for non-stop commercial flights from 8 majority Muslim countries. The DHS says the restrictions are based on evaluated intelligence of ongoing threats that could include terrorists smuggling explosive devices in various consumer items. Laptops, iPads, cameras and other large electronic gear will now have to be checked in at 10 airports, including Cairo International and Dubai International. Kevin McAleese, Washington.
US Secretary of State Rex Tillerson will skip a meeting of NATO foreign ministers next month, according to US officials. He'll go to a G7 meeting in Italy instead and then on to Moscow. It's raising further questions about the Trump White House commitment to the NATO military alliance. The Trump administration, meanwhile, is mulling broader and stiffer sanctions against North Korea, according to news agencies. US Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says diplomatic efforts have failed and that military options are still on the table. From the U.S., Priscilla Huff.
The goal of the new sanctions regime would be to cut North Korea off from the global financial system, Reuters reports. The sanctions would likely impact Chinese banks, and that's one reason why the sanctions regime would not be announced until after the meeting of U.S. President Donald Trump and China's President Xi Jinping in early April. While the White House has refused to comment, the Chinese Foreign Ministry has made clear it's their belief that the North Korean situation is at a crossroads, and it could continue to escalate toward conflict in a potential war, or all sides could cool down and jointly pull the North Korean nuclear issue back to a path of political and diplomatic resolution. Even as the U.S. warns that all options remain on the table, including military, the question remains of how effective a tighter sanctions regime would actually be because North Korea has few links to the global economy. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
A new attack has been launched by rebels and jihadist groups on East Damascus. It comes 2 days after Syrian forces pushed back an initial assault. Rebels claim to have taken back some territory in the Syrian capital's Jobar district, which was captured on Sunday and then lost to Syrian government troops. Former IRA leader turned peacetime politician Martin McGuinness has died at the age of 66. He had been Northern Ireland's Deputy First Minister until January when he stood down in protest at an energy scandal. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
And thank you very much, Ollie Barrett. Welcome to the programme. One or two technical issues going on. You might be aware I did mention on Twitter and on Facebook, Microsoft's services, including Skype and Hotmail, are currently down. That's a big problem for us because we use Skype for our phone. That's our landline service as well as Skype. So we're going to hang about and see does it improve. Improve probably the wrong word. To see whether they fix it or not, the Mirror reporting that the Mirror newspaper that in UK, Europe and in North America, severe disruption to Microsoft product users, again Hotmail, Skype, Xbox, all that sort of stuff, as Microsoft services suffer major outage. So we'll see how it goes. In the meantime, we'll crack on anyway. The show must go on. I know that sounded nothing like the Queen song. By the way, I'm well aware of it. Look, we'll crack on and we'll see how we go, eh? It is Tuesday, March 21st, 2017. How are you?
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Yeah, so the commercial fisherman and commercial diver, Dana Durnford, amazing guy, whistleblower, was due to be on this hour. Fingers crossed we will get him on to talk about the Pacific Ocean and Fukushima. So that was due to happen this hour. Hopefully it will. And in hour two, the legendary trends forecaster Gerald Celente will join me, hopefully. Gerald's talking about his visit to Ireland, forthcoming trends in the news, the latest trends journal itself, and more besides. We are broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, alternatecurrentradio.com, and of course TuneIn Radio. You may tweet to me. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, richie@richieallen.co.uk. That's how to access me. That is how to access me. Want to say hi to Andy Ashton. Andy, how are you? First time listener, Andy is. We met, Andy and I, watching Salford beat Castleford 13-12 on Sunday. I don't even know if we met. Andy is a mate of somebody whom I know very well, my mate Terry Howell, who's a huge Salford fan, and he's listening because of Terry's recommendation. You might have picked a bad night, Andy, to tune into Manchester's Richie Allen Show, because technical difficulties are, well, they are in the way at the moment. Just to tell you what the Mirror is saying, UK, Europe and North America users of Microsoft products like Skype and Hotmail and the less interesting Xbox Live, those there are severe problems. And all Microsoft are saying right about now is simply, we're working on it. Right? We're working on it. Stay tuned. So we'll stay tuned. Just to tell you, obviously, despite the wonderful professionalism of the Richie Allen Show, right, we are an independent outlet. So despite the wonderful technology we have available to us, we don't have phones plugged into our telco sockets. Why? Because we don't have the money to be phoning people in North America and in Australia and New Zealand. We couldn't afford that. So as well as using Skype audio because it sounds wonderful, we also phone people through Skype. We have Skype phone accounts. In fact, we have two Skype phone accounts with two numbers. But we can't use them if Skype isn't online. All right, so there you are. A number of you are helpfully, at least you think it's helpful anyway, recommending other services. They're not good enough. They're not good enough. They're just not good enough. And even if they were, between now and the end of the programme, getting in touch with Gerald and Dana and getting them to download different software, it just wouldn't be happening. It just wouldn't be. I did meet Andy Ashton, by the way. Of course, I was jesting with him about, shall I say it on air, shall I? About the, well, my friend Terence, he manufactures mugs. In fact, he manufactured even mugs and sold them for this particular programme. And we talked about products and Salford and intellectual property rights and all of that. So I remember Andy well. A great day on Sunday. So look, we'll see how things go and we'll see, can we do a proper show. We'll wait to hear from Microsoft. And if Microsoft come back in the next 15-20 minutes and say, it's all fixed, it's all sorted, well then we will proceed and carry on. But if they don't, we might struggle. But as I talk to you right now, it looks like Hotmail is online anyway. We'll see the Skype come back online. If it does, we'll be in business. Alrighty, we'll see how it goes, as the saying goes. Right, now, ordinarily we do a news roundup now, and we hear clips and bits and bobs of various things making the news ordinarily. But what I wanted to talk about in this particular monologue, as it approaches 9 minutes past the hour, I wanted to talk about the former First Minister of Northern Ireland and former IRA commander Martin McGuinness, who died today, age 66. He had a rare heart condition, apparently. And as I speak with you, I believe there is a mass taking place in Derry. News outlets were showing photographs and video footage of his coffin as it was taken to Derry today. And I've been watching it very carefully. The way Martin McGuinness's death is being reported in the media, I've been watching that pretty carefully all day long. Carefully, What do I mean by carefully? I've been paying attention to it because it brought back a lot of memories for me. Okay. Now, I've mentioned on this program before, I'm a Republican. I've talked, not often now, I've not talked very often about this, but about my belief about the my opinions on the partitioning of Ireland. It shouldn't have happened. It shouldn't ever have been allowed to happen. And I've talked about the treachery of Eamon de Valera and all that on this programme on occasion before, but not very often. There was a show I did last March 27th, and just in case I was contradicted, I looked up the date. Last March 27th, 2016, I talked a lot about how the island of Ireland came to be partitioned and all of that. So it did happen, and the consequences for Irish Catholics in the north of Ireland would be profound. The decision by De Valera to sell out Michael Collins and to eventually agree to the Irish Free State and all of that. You know this, you know your history. I'm not going to bore you with it because we don't have time for a history lesson anyway. Profound consequences for Catholics in the north. And that's not being discussed today. We're hearing from the families of people who died in Warrington, in Guildford, in Birmingham, and in Enniskillen. And those people are proclaiming Martin McGuinness to be a terrorist and a murderer. There is no way I would ever dare to argue with the families of people who died. How could you? If they want to go on television and on radio and speak about Martin McGuinness, they've earned the right to. And their opinion matters. And I'm not going to argue with them at all. So you have people who suffered at the hands of the IRA. And on the other side, you have politicians and you have journalists talking about him in a favourable light, I suppose, talking about his contribution to the peace process in Northern Ireland. In fact, the BBC is getting widely criticised on social media today for alleged bias. They're saying the BBC are even comparing McGuinness to Mandela. Now, I didn't notice that today. I didn't hear McGuinness and Mandela's names being mentioned in the same sentence. There are similarities in the lives of McGuinness and Mandela, but I'm not going to get into that today. What's not being discussed then today? What isn't being discussed? And I suppose that's our job. It's why we set up. This is the Richie Allen Show. We boast, you know, telling you the things the mainstream media don't want you to know. What are they not discussing today? Well, they're not discussing what life was like for Catholics, nationalists in Northern Ireland in the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s. They're not. Now, Martin McGuinness was born in 1951, in case, like me, you couldn't do the maths and you had to get a calculator out and figure it out. He was 66 when he died today. He was born in 1951. What was life like for Catholics in Northern Ireland? It was horrendous. It was horrendous. Now, some of you are going to throw all sorts of abuse at me, and I'm going to take it. I have no problems with that. Much of what I'm about to tell you is fact. Some of it is opinion. There was widespread discrimination against Catholics in Northern Ireland in the years after the partition of my country. There's no doubt about that. Against Catholics in employment, in housing, education, voting rights. There's no doubt about that at all. Young Catholic men and women had, I'm going to be fair and say, they had little prospect of a job in the public sector or the private sector. And they had little chance at all of getting a house from their local authority. Why was that? Well, because at the time, only ratepayers or house renters had the right to vote. So it was made difficult and in some cases impossible for nationalists, for Catholics, to have a house. Now, the harsh and brutal treatment that nationalists and Catholics received at the hands of the RUC, even before the escalation of violence in the 60s and 70s, the treatment of Catholics was shocking. It was worse than shocking. It was disgraceful. So this is what they were putting up with. Protestant schools were funded and equipped with the best of everything. Catholic schools were left to fend for themselves. It was apartheid. That's not an exaggeration. And the people of the Republic of Ireland and the politicians of the Republic didn't give a damn about their brethren in the north. They didn't give a damn about them. And I'll talk more about that in a minute and how that shaped me as a person, as a commentator and as a journalist. Now, Terence O'Neill became the Prime Minister of Northern Ireland in 1963. He, I believe, looking back, wanted to address the problems in the province. He wanted to. The problems with respect to the discrimination against Catholics I've just touched upon there. Now, he met with the Irish Taoiseach, who was at that time Sean Lamass. In fact, it was an amazing thing that. It was the first time in 40 years that such a meeting had taken place. It was unthinkable that the Prime Minister, the Taoiseach in Dublin, would meet with the Prime Minister of Northern Ireland. So for the first time in 40 years, they began to talk about the problems facing Catholics in the six counties. Now, unionists didn't like it at all. And violence finally erupted in 1966. Now, some of you will tweet me and you will email me saying, you're leaving stuff out, you're being selective. I'm not. I'm synopsising as best as I can. Violence erupted in 1966. There was the twin 50th anniversaries of the Battle of the Somme and the Easter Rising. Major, major milestones for the Catholic and Protestant communities, no doubt about it. Okay? There was rioting and civil disorder in May and June, and that was because of the murder of two Catholics and a Protestant by a loyalist terror group called the Ulster Volunteer Force. To skip on, we saw civil rights marches in 1968, civil rights marches for the rights of Catholics and nationalists. They were met with absolute brutality by the RUC. They were. There's no disputing that. Now, the Prime Minister, Terence O'Neill, he didn't last very long after that. He resigned, in fact, in 1969. Those civil rights marches continued anyway, and the police were absolutely brutal. Now, O'Neill was replaced by a guy called James Chichester Clark. Interestingly enough, Clark wanted to continue the reforms started by O'Neill. He wanted to. He wanted to set up bodies to allocate council housing. He wanted to investigate the cycle of violence, and he wanted to look at policing. He also wanted to look at recommendations to disband the hated B Specials auxiliaries. He wanted to look at disarming the police in Northern Ireland, and he wanted to look at setting up the Ulster Defence Regiment. Okay, these were things he wanted to do, James Chichester Clark. Loyalists were outraged. Outraged. And they responded with more violence. The violence was horrendous. There were attacks on a huge scale of Catholic homes. Many, many Catholic homes were burned to the ground, and the RUC did very little to stop any of this. Nothing. So where were the IRA in all of this at that time in the late 1960s? Well, in the 60s, they were fairly inactive, pretty much inactive. They had abandoned their last campaign of violence, I think, what was that, 1961, 62? Internment at that time and other measures had kind of softened them. But in the late 1960s, particularly in 1969, the more militant provisional IRA broke away from the official IRA. Why? Because of what they saw as the official IRA's inability or unwillingness to support Catholics and nationalists and their rights. So the provisional IRA supported civil rights, the defence of the Catholic community, and of course, the unification of Ireland. Now, at this time, in the late 60s, loyalist paramilitaries were mobilising too, the UVF and the UDA. Now, these paramilitaries were supported by the British Army, undoubtedly, and by British intelligence. By 1971, Chichester Clark was gone, and he was replaced as Prime Minister of Northern Ireland by a guy called Brian Faulkner, who undoubtedly will be remembered by history as a world-class moron, because he reintroduced internment, which, in case you don't know, is detention without trial, which targeted Catholics, of course. It didn't target loyalists, and it was unsuccessful anyway because no provisional IRA soldiers or officers were ever captured. So this fostered more anger, more hatred, and further discontent, and that was followed by Bloody Sunday. I'm not going to tell you about Bloody Sunday because you know it already. 13 demonstrators were shot and killed by the Parachute Regiment at a civil rights march in Derry. A later victim dying of wounds sustained on the day. As a result of the killings in Derry, more people wanted to join the IRA and even more British troops were sent to Northern Ireland. And I'm not going to tell you any more because you know the rest of it. And this is the world that Martin McGuinness grew up in. So he's been called a murderer today. Now, I'm not going to argue with the victims' families. I want to reiterate that. Victims of IRA violence, I wouldn't dare to do that. Who could accept a bomb being placed in a pub, killing people, playing dominoes, drinking beer, men, women, sometimes children, Guildford, Birmingham, Warrington, Enniskillen, different again. Who could stand over that? I'm not standing over it. But I've been looking at this for years and years. The apartheid I described earlier on, the brutal existence endured by Catholics, the apathy in Dublin, the tyrannical Royal Ulster Constabulary, the indifference in London, the failure of the police in Northern Ireland to stop Catholic houses being burned, and Bloody Sunday. All of this, in my opinion, made violent struggle inevitable. And I've been speaking to people today, a number of different people, including my friend and colleague Hayden Hewitt, who said a child murderer is a child murderer, full stop. And if it was your sister, your brother, your cousin, your mother, your father, nobody can argue with you. But the rest of us have to look at it more dispassionately than that. And I can't sit here and say that I wouldn't have been like Martin McGuinness if I grew up in that environment. What other options were on the table? What other options were on the table? Now, I'm not in any way seeking to justify the bombing of innocents. They should never, whoever sanctioned the bombings of pubs, the bombings of Remembrance Day parades, that should never have happened. That's disgusting. There is no justification for it. But targeting the British Army, how could I say that I wouldn't have been like that growing up in that environment? I can't. They had no other option. You know, growing up in Waterford City in Ireland, which might as well have been a million miles away, because we didn't obviously experience any of that. What was it, 140 miles, 150 miles away? Might as well have been a million miles away. Nobody cared. And I grew up influenced and angry. I became incredibly angry listening to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, the two main parties in Ireland, bitterly condemning the IRA and Sinn Féin at every opportunity, speaking about Republicans in the North like they were vermin, something you'd scrape off your shoe. This was politicians in the Republic of Ireland. And the police in Waterford City, in Cork, in Dublin, in Limerick, in Kerry, following people who were members of Sinn Féin, stalking them, harassing them. Fianna Fáil, the faux Republican Party, deserters and traitors, never gave a damn about what was happening to Irish men and women a few miles up the road. Maybe if they did, maybe, we wouldn't have had the mindless violence that we had for so many years. Their hero, Éamon de Valera, the greatest traitor in Irish history, selling out Michael Collins and the people of Ireland. Sickening. And I'm going to go back to Guildford, Warrington, Birmingham, Enniskillen. Sickening, horrifying, unimaginable. I'll come up with more adjectives if you want. You couldn't make a case for that. And I'll not argue with the victims' families bitterly condemning Martin McGuinness today. I will not. But the British Empire was worse. It drove nationalists like McGuinness to take up arms against them. And terrible, terrible things happen in a time of war. Of course, the media here in the UK and in the Republic of Ireland didn't tell you war was going on. It was black and white. Terrorists, insurgents were causing chaos in the north of Ireland. No, no, they were at war. And you know Bashar al-Assad is under duress in Syria. I was thinking today, foreign agents trying to destroy his country. He is rightfully defending Syria's integrity, right? But when the Syrian army capture jihadists, Wahhabi lunatics, do you think they're not torturing them? Do you think they're not behaving barbarically? Because they are. Some of them are. Of course they are. And agents of the IRA did terrible things to people. Terrible things. And I believe today, as much as I believed yesterday, and as much as I believed 10 years ago and 15 years ago, and I'll take your criticism for it, the monstrous, murderous, tyrannical British Empire take full responsibility for the deaths of its own citizens. In my opinion. I've interviewed McGuinness and Adams over the years. I believe in taking up arms against their oppressors in the north of Ireland, they did what they were forced to do. Horrifying as it was. The bombing of pensioners, the bombing of people in pubs, can't legislate. You can't accept that. You can't accept it. You can never tolerate that, whoever sanctioned it. But this is what happens when people are brutalised, when they are humiliated, when they are starved, when they are made second-class citizens in their own country. It was inevitable. But I say what I always said about McGuinness and Adams. When devolution happened and when the Assembly was formed, they should have disappeared off the face of the earth. I believe that. I've always said it. Anybody involved in what they call the armed struggle shouldn't be involved in frontline politics in 2017. They shouldn't be. And that goes for Gerry Adams as well. Because if you had just a smidgen of compassion for the people who lost their lives and their families, you would say, this is where we are now. There's no need for me. And you'd move on off into the sunset and retire. And let people, let nationalists with no connections to that time, and that goes for loyalists as well, with no connection to the time of violence and murder and the unspeakable things that were done on both sides, you'd say to them, you don't have any place now in public life. Therefore, you should gracefully bow out and get out of the limelight. And I said that years ago, and I'll say it today. So it's complicated. Like I said, on the one hand, he was a murderer and a terrorist. I'm not going to criticise the people who say that. On the other hand, you have people saying he did a lot in after the Good Friday Agreement to bring about that which we saw 10 years ago, which was power sharing in the north of Ireland. But the truth, of course, as always, is somewhere in the middle. And what's not been spoken about today, and I'm just going to finish on this for the moment, are the conditions in Northern Ireland that spawned people like Martin McGuinness and others. This is the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2. TuneIn Radio, of course, as well, my own website. And I do recommend you bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. Going to take a very quick break. Back in a minute with more, and I'll give you an update on Microsoft and the Microsoft products. Back in a minute.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole of market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the dots or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they do.
Traffic 2. Available now at premiumonpictures.co.uk.
Do not invest another pound of your money until you've heard this message. Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my new best-selling book. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk for full details. Inside, I reveal why gold could soar to $10,000 an ounce and how to make sure you own enough of the right type of gold. To get your copy dispatched today, go to newcaseforgold.co.uk now. This book will change everything you think you know about investing in gold. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk today.
Right, welcome back to the programme. The problem is, I'm hearing from friends of mine in the United States that in some areas of the US, the Microsoft issues have resolved themselves. But here, we're not able to log on to Skype yet. I've just been chatting with on email with Dana Durnford. I've invited Dana to come back on another day this week. But Gerald Salente tells me that he's able to use Skype out of his office in Brooklyn, but we can't. And that's a huge problem for us, even because, as I mentioned earlier, we're very heavily dependent on it. That's my phone going off in the background. The Outlook is back working. The Outlook service is back working, so I'm able to communicate with people through Outlook because my show email and my private email are both Outlook at the moment. But Skype is not yet connecting. So we've lost Dana anyway this hour. We'll hang about a bit and we'll see does it resolve itself. And if it does, we'll get Gerald on. But if it doesn't, we're going to just give it up as a bad idea, to be honest with you. Number of tweets on what I was saying on the Martin McGuinness story on what has transpired today. I'll scroll down and I'll read those, but I need a couple of seconds to do that. So while I'm doing that, let's have some music from The Who. At 26 and a half minutes to the top of the hour on your Richie Allen show on davidicke.com.
Now you dare to look me in the eye. Those crocodiles.
Yeah, The Who substitute on the Richie Allen Show for Tuesday, March 21st, 2017. 23 minutes to the top of the hour. We're having one of those days. One of those days, my friend, when things go wrong, but it's completely out of our control or beyond our control. Microsoft reporting problems from about 5:30 p.m. London time today. And apparently those problems going away in certain other parts of the world, but not here yet. We're heavily dependent on Skype, not only to Skype people, but to phone people with on as well, long distance. We've got a couple of phone accounts with them, only for thrifty purposes, for the purposes of being thrifty, because long distance phone calls through BT or another provider, the cost is astronomical. To Australia, New Zealand, the United States, Europe, and of course we speak to people all over the world, so we're very heavily dependent on that. Hotmail is back, Outlook is back, but as of yet we haven't got Skype. So Dana Durnford has accepted our apologies and will be back on the programme maybe tomorrow, all going well, and we're hoping that this problem, whatever it is, will resolve itself in time for me to speak with Gerald Celente just after the top of the hour. Now, if we don't, I'm going to bid you adieu. I'm going to bid you adieu, because I don't fancy sitting here playing music and talking to myself. I don't fancy it. Right? Might have to do it, maybe. I don't know. We'll see how it goes anyway. We'll crack on. Number of you coming in on the very end of my thoughts on Martin McGuinness, whom I interviewed a few years ago when I was in Spain on the radio in Spain. Spoke to him for about 25 minutes, the only time I ever interviewed him. I interviewed Adams many years before that, and it was a longer interview, and I've interviewed many men and women from various parts of nationalist communities in Northern Ireland over the years, and I've interviewed people from the other side as well. Martin McGuinness passed away this morning, aged 66. Interesting that the BBC are being accused of bias and of fawning over him and his memory. Some people are alleging online that they even compared him to Nelson Mandela. Now, I don't know if that's true. I spent a lot of time looking at this today, but I didn't hear anybody mention Martin McGuinness and Nelson Mandela in the same sentence. So he was taken to Derry this evening. Presumably he will be laid to rest tomorrow. I should have that information, actually. I'm a little bit lax there. I guess it would be tomorrow. It does, not to be in any way disrespectful, and I don't want to sound disrespectful, but having lived in Spain for a number of years, having lived in the UK for a number of years, things are very different in terms of the haste at which or with which people are laid to rest. In Ireland, in the Republic of Ireland anyway, when somebody dies, if they die in the AM, there's usually a mass in the PM. The person might be laid out in a chapel for people to pay their respects, the open coffin that day. And quite often, the following morning, the funeral. You have the funeral, the actual burial takes place. So it's an extraordinary thing. And the people not from the Republic of Ireland, they can't understand it. Of course, traditionally, it doesn't happen so much now, but maybe it does in rural areas. But there used to be a three-day wake, which often happened in the home of the deceased, where they would be laid out for people to see, and drink would be brought out, stories would be told about the deceased, and they would be waked. But in the UK, it takes quite a few days before somebody is finally laid to rest. And in Spain, if I remember as well, it's several days as well, but it's pretty quick in the Republic of Ireland. I don't know if that means anything to you, but there you are. You can tweet this programme at any time. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, richie@richieallen.co.uk. That is my email address. Now, an interesting lady will join me tomorrow, very interesting woman. The journalist, Julie Kelly, the reporter Julie Kelly, fascinating woman, is going to be on the programme tomorrow. And amongst the things she'll be discussing with me, she'll be discussing GMOs And she'll also talk about climate change. Marvellous woman. Came across a few news stories where she was mentioned. Gave her a quick message on social media. And she very graciously said she'd come on. She's pretty well known in eastern parts of the US. So Julie Kelly will join us tomorrow. And hopefully we'll have Dana Durnford as well. All going well if this bloody problem sorts itself out. 17 minutes past, or even 17 minutes to the top of the hour. I've been trying to scroll down on Twitter to read some of your comments. Pineal gland. I love these pseudonyms on Twitter. Says, talk about David Rockefeller passing. In fact, I got a few emails that were pretty critical of me not mentioning the death of David Rockefeller yesterday. I'm a bit weird like that. There wasn't very much I could add to the death of David Rockefeller. There wasn't very much I could say about him that I haven't said before in terms of his affiliation with nefarious characters in the Rothschild family, the things that they've been up to over the years. I just didn't see the point, and I didn't have much time to get into it anyway. David Rockefeller yesterday, who did die aged 101, had several transplants as far as I know. There's not much to add to it. Yes, there was a lot of things unknown about David Rockefeller, at least anyway, through mainstream media sources. But through great researchers like David and others, we came to know a lot about the Rockefellers, the Rothschild lackeys, the crimes of the Rockefellers and whatnot. I just didn't see any point in getting into it yesterday. Now, Jane, nice to hear from you, Jane. Take up arms against invaders, yes, says Jane. But when you torture and murder unarmed civilians, you cross the line, all sympathy gone. And Jane, like I was saying earlier on, the surviving family members of people murdered, whether it's by the IRA or by the UVF or the UDA, they would wholeheartedly agree with you, and I'm not going to disagree with you or criticise you at all. No way. Luga tweets, all I saw was pain. The Hyde Park bombing, the tours of my brother screwing him up, the same for the Irish. Madness, tweets Luga. Luga, thanks very much for your tweet. Base Ninja tweets, great recap of the troubles, Richie. I'm not sure it was great, Ninja. I'm not sure it was great at all, but it's my opinion for what it's worth. Ninja said, you couldn't have said it any fairer than you did. Well, you have to be honest and say that your opinion is subjective. You know, the thing that drove me away from my country and the thing I hated, and for a long time I thought I hated Ireland. I've not been back to Ireland for 13 years. Not been anywhere near it. And I used to think I hated it. And I used to think I hated Irishness and the characteristics of Irish people, if you can quantify people, if you can assign characteristics to Irish people. I really fell out of love with the place. And when I made my peace with it, I realised that what I hated were those people in the 80s and the 90s. Jesus, I interviewed some of these people on WLRFM when I started out. These people condemning Republicans, condemning terrorism, condemning violence, and never giving anything to the nationalists or the Catholics in the north of Ireland. Never tried to see it from their side or both sides. These Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael people who never gave a damn about what people were going through and the lives they had to live in the north for decades. I hated those people. Those criminals, those liars like Charlie Haughey, who got a state funeral. A scumbag, if ever there was one. You have another one in Bertie Ahern. Should be locked up for the rest of his life. There's the guy who was talking about McGuinness today in glowing terms. You know, some of you who despised McGuinness and others like him, you might want to have a look at Bertie Ahern today. The finance minister who didn't have a bank account, who was getting loans of money from businessmen in Manchester. That's the Ireland I hate. That I'm not going to swear today. I'm not going to do it. 13 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. But I did. I got sick to my stomach of them. Martin Cullen from my city of Waterford. All these sleek greasy Teflon scumbag politicians who would take any opportunity to condemn Sinn Féin, to condemn nationalists, to condemn Republicans, to condemn terrorism. Never gave a damn for the people of Northern Ireland. Not just the nationalists in the Republic of in Northern Ireland, but the loyalists either. Could never stand that. Could never identify. I could never reconcile that. You know, that nonsense. That privileged attitude. That sneering, condescending attitude towards what was happening in Northern Ireland. You know. So thanks very much for the tweets on that. JP in Manchester says, not one apology from McGuinness, not even on a retrospective humanist level. He was no hero. Heroes save lives, says JP. Well, I've never called him a hero, and I wouldn't characterise him as a hero either. What I said to my friend Hayden Hewitt today, who runs LiveLeak.com and of course makes television programmes with me in Manchester, and he was very much in the camp of the victims' families. A murder is a murder is a murder. Full stop, says Hayden. And Hayden is very consistent on that. He'll condemn the barbaric, murderous behaviour of the Israeli Defence Forces. He'll also condemn murder coming from Hamas or coming from a Palestinian man or woman, whatever it happens to be. That's the way he is. And he's consistent. And that's how he sees the world, and he's entitled to see it like that. I ask myself, what would I do growing up in an open-air prison like that? Because it was in Northern Ireland. It was. Everything I described at the top of the programme was true. What would I do? What would I do when the RUC are attacking civil rights marches? What would I do knowing that the British Army and British intelligence were colluding with terrorists on the other side? What would I do if homes were being burned to the ground? You see, you can't sit there all pious and all, you know, holier than thou and say, oh, it's terrorism, it's filthy terrorism, no matter what way you look at it, Richie. Yeah, it's easy for us to say that, but live like that. I said to Hayden today, live in Gaza for a bit. I'm telling you now, if I lived in Gaza, the last thing I would do is run up to an Israeli citizen, a man or a woman, and stab them. I wouldn't do that. But would I be plotting the killing of and the retribution towards Israeli soldiers? Probably, I probably would. How could you say you wouldn't? Too much bullshit in the media. Nobody will tell the truth. If you were in that situation, if it's your children, what would you do? You know, I'm not saying he's a hero or Adams. I said a long time ago, Dave should have fecked off away from public life many years ago. That would have shown some compassion for the victims on all sides of the divide. Right, we feel strongly that we had to do what we did, but we accept it's time now to bow out of public life. And they didn't do that. And I think that was terribly wrong. There are some excellent young men and women in politics in Northern Ireland. Loyalist politicians and Republican politicians. Excellent men and women. And they are not tainted by the associations with paramilitary groups. They are not. And that's a good thing. McGuinness and Adams were. McGuinness was. Adams is. Shouldn't be there, I don't believe. Brian Broderick tweets, Bertie, hashtag the dig out. D tweets, it's the state and the so-called elites, politicians, but the people and the culture of my Irishness I do love, says D there. Yvonne tweets, and don't forget the church, Richie, don't forget the church. Yeah. What did Catherine Corliss say on the programme last week or the week before? This is the thing I hated so much about my homeland. And I know people used to email me for years going, ah, you have this downer on Ireland, Richie. It's not the same. No, they weren't saying it's not the same. They were saying, isn't it the same everywhere else, Richie? Isn't it the same everywhere else, Richie? But it's my country. That's how I felt when I was a teenager and in my early 20s. I didn't give a damn about corruption in the UK or corruption in Thailand or in North America. It was my country. You know? Bodies being discovered in Tuam and the bishop saying a few prayers and telling the police in 1974, let's just forget all about it. So much of it, you know? I accept everybody's opinion on the death of Martin McGuinness, and I'll read out tweets and emails no matter what they're saying on it, because ultimately nobody's right and nobody's wrong. It's 7.5 minutes to the top of the hour. Going to take some music, going to do a quick check on our technical issue with Microsoft. I'll give you an update on that when I come back, and hopefully, just hopefully, we'll be able to get Gerald Celente on the programme. If not, I'm going to call it. So there you go. So in the meantime, here's some music. This is Jimi Hendrix. There's a story about this. There's a story in the Daily Mail about Jimi Hendrix today. Back in a minute, I'll tell you more about it. You won't believe it.
Hey, Joe. Where you going with that gun of yours? Hey.
Joe, Jimi Hendrix. Unbelievable story in the Daily Mail today about a couple having a row with a neighbour over a parking space. And the row escalated to the point that the couple contacted the police to say that their neighbour, who was in dispute with them over a parking space, remember, had threatened to shoot them with a gun. But in fact... he was singing Hey Joe. Apparently their neighbour the guy they're having a dispute with is a pub band guitarist, and he was playing Hey Joe. Now, they must have known this, but so nasty did this dispute get, they contacted the police and told him a pack of lies and said that he had a gun in his hand and he was going to shoot them. In fact, he was singing the Hey Joe lyrics very loudly. Do you know, the disconnect and the bitterness and the anger that exists in society is unprecedented, isn't it? I mean, how do you get into a dispute with a neighbour that escalates to that point where you're phoning the police and telling lies about Jimi Hendrix lyrics? Isn't it just ludicrous, isn't it? Listen, we're not back. Outlook is back, but Skype is not. And there isn't anything I can do about that. We were due to be speaking with Dana Dern for this hour, and we were due, obviously, to speak with Gerald Celente in the forthcoming hour, but it's not going to happen because it's not online, Microsoft. So there isn't anything I can do about that. So I'm going to call it and apologise to you and say that we're just going to do it all again tomorrow at the same time, when presumably this will be sorted. According to the latest news, this is a problem that first surfaced some weeks ago, but at the time, it must have been over a weekend, or it must have been early in the AM, because it didn't affect this programme. But the problem began around about 5:30 PM today, and just in case you're coming in on the end of this hour expecting to hear Gerald Celente, we are heavily dependent on Skype. Not that we can't use phones, we can. But I've never connected phones to the telco outputs on our extraordinary desk here, our radio desk, because we just can't afford to be phoning people in the US, in Canada, in Australia, and so on, so on, so on. So we have Skype phone accounts. We have two, in fact, numbers with Skype. The audio quality is magnificent when we phone through Skype, and it is incredibly, incredibly cheap, which is why we do it like that. So when it went down today, we're nobbled. Now, that being said, I will take measures to make sure that in the event this happens again, there is another way of doing it. There's another way of interviewing our guests. But for now, I'm sad to say that after an hour, I'm going to call it, because I don't want to be sitting here playing music. We don't do that. We're not a music programme. And I can be doing other things with my time, including sorting out guests for future Richie Allen programmes. So look, thanks for tuning in. Massive apologies for this. It's beyond our control. You know this to be true. Just going to sign off, ring off and say you and I will talk again tomorrow at 7 PM BST. It won't be BST till next week. GMT until tomorrow. Bye for now. And thanks for your patience.
You can dance if you like, you can sing every line of every song.